the civil compromise agreement, which is the third page there, when you read through it, you'll see it doesn't obligate the defendant to do anything. All it says is that the victim acknowledges satisfaction and agrees to drop the case. And that's, in effect, indeed, what happens in practice in all of these cases, or most of them, at least. The defendant, in fact, just convinces the victim to go ahead and drop it. It's important to remember that this is not a level playing field. And these victims are, as I said, they're very vulnerable people. Intimidation and control are the whole essence of domestic violence in the first place, and these people sometimes have been regularly intimidated and victimized over years. The purpose of civil compromise is to resolve wrongful conduct outside the criminal justice system, and instead of punitive sanctions to provide for restitution for an injury that's done. And I think the statute, the civil compromise statute, is basically designed for property crimes, and that's how it's best used. But where no restitution to the victim is ever paid or ever intended, it's nothing but an agreement to drop the case, then the whole purpose of civil compromise is not being served. Even if the victim does agree, or if the court makes him agree, to get some sort of counseling, which is seldom done, those agreements are unenforceable, of course, because what's happened is that the case is dismissed. It isn't like a civil compromise in a property crime where there's a promissory note or cash payment or something like that. It's just a hollow promise. So the thing is basically trying to think of a word from law school. It's not coming down. I think it's nugatory, isn't that it? Agreement. The National Council of Juvenile and Family Court Judges, and it's in this, as I say, little pamphlet that was handed out to you, recommends against civil compromise in these cases. It's been a problem in a number of states. Several states have done and are doing what House Bill 3051 would do, which is to abolish it in domestic violence cases. And let me just end by saying, as bad as the criminal justice system sometimes is, and I'm as aware as anyone of how that is, where these dismissals of phony compromises are done really sends a message that domestic violence in the state is okay. And that is the message that's out there, I regret to say. So I urge that you do pass House Bill 3051 out with a do pass recommendation. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you have.
Madam Chair.
Senator Shoemaker.
Steve, what would happen or what should happen if before the dismissal of the criminal charge, the victim and the accused enter into an agreement, an enforceable agreement, that amounts to a completed civil compromise in which the defendant agrees to make things right or to pay money or do whatever? What ought to happen in that case, and what would happen in that case?
It's perfectly possible, of course, in that rare case, to order restitution as part of a probationary sentence if the defendant were to plead to the charge or be convicted of the charge. So it's certainly possible to have reparations made. What happens in these cases really is that he may send her to the hospital, but it's his wife, so the money's coming out of one pot or one insurance carrier or something like that. We're really not talking about the kind of restitution that one stranger may make to another. Give you an example. If this bill were to pass in this form, and a stranger-to-stranger assault, let's say a guy hits another guy in a bar and causes him some medical costs or something, it might be appropriate in a case like that. But you're talking about different kinds of players. You're not talking about a situation where these people are one domestic unit, which is usually the case, or a case where one party has regularly intimidated and coerced and injured the other over a period of years, you're talking about a place where you could argue at least civil compromise might be appropriate. And if 3051 were to pass, that would still be true. So it limits it to the area of domestic violence. But going on here. Does that answer your question?
Well, if the two parties that are most involved were to agree to something that was appropriate or seemed appropriate between them, is there a way to use that to influence or to bring about a consistent criminal decision? And can you tie it all in together within the context of the criminal case that's ongoing?
Well, I think you could.
Does that happen now?
It doesn't now, because if there's a civil compromise, well, let me just put this way. I've never seen one that was really an honest civil compromise. Okay. I've yet to see one.
It just doesn't happen.
I've ordered.
When you take these cases to the courts, what do you have when you're done with all of that?
You mean once they've been convicted?
Yeah, once you have a misdemeanor, we've gone through and you have a misdemeanor. Then what happens?
Okay.
Are they back together? Or are they out? They're still living.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. What's the material effect of this?
The defendant, you're talking about in terms of the marital relationship?
No, I just mean what's the outcome?
Probationary sentence where there's some supervision. I think this is really the key. There's some supervision over the defendant who, if he needs alcohol treatment, somebody's going to see that he goes or has his probation revoked.
I guess we're now into a position where we're not having it. Well, maybe if in fact we're going to limit probation supervision to personal offenses, I guess that would basically we're now after this budgetary session saying anybody who's convicted of misdemeanor is not going to have probation supervision based on what we're doing with the budget down there.
Even in person-to-person crime?
I think we still would have it under person-to-person.
Right.
That's why I have some questions about criminal mischief and telephonic harassment in terms of narrowing it a bit further to say how important are those issues to have included here if we move with this bill.
I personally think they're very important. Telephonic harassment has become a major source of threatened domestic violence, and I'm talking about threats to immediately kill the victim. And criminal mischief can arise to absolutely trashing everything that the person owns. So I think they're very important to be included. They're major forms of domestic violence.
But they're not personal. They're not personal. Well, they are person in some ways, but they're not person in the traditional sense of what we know as personal physical injury. I know they're important to domestic violence,
right.
But we're talking about physical injury right now, and
we're
talking about those two things are not likely to be under any parole supervision given where we are.
Well, if so, that's a tragedy. But
we've got lots of tragedies here.
Yeah. Telephonic harassment is often either precedes or is coupled with immediately following carrying out of the threat, and sometimes the threat is and the act is death. But I think we have to.
Aren't you able to get restraining orders from one incident of telephone harassment these days?
Yes.
Does that not work?
No, that works. That works.
Well.
But if there may not be a restraining, it may be too late for the restraining order sometimes.
Well, but be certainly too late for a civil compromise, too.
Well, No, I...
I mean...
The way I put it.
We go down this track, Judge. This is not going to solve that immediate problem, which is a real one, in terms of protecting people.
Well, I was not aware until you said this, that there was going to be no probation supervision of, for example, telephone harassment or criminal mischief. If that's the case, that's a bad situation. But civil compromise, by allowing a phony civil compromise to take the case out of the system altogether and even eliminate the possibility of bench probation or anything that would enforce some sanction against the defendant. I've forgotten how I started the sentence, but civil compromise is no help. Civil compromise is no help because it's not a compromise.
At the risk of sounding unsympathetic, which I am not, but having had some experience in the system, I see on page 18, here we say, judges should not accept civil compromises. I mean, isn't that always, the judge can always say no.
Sure.
I'm not going to accept a civil compromise.
You know,
period.
Yeah, you're right. I'm glad you caught that. Now, usually I'm here saying, trust us, we know what we're doing. This is an area, Senator Springer, where I can't say that. That civil compromise is used, and I won't name the names of some of my colleagues, but is used as a docket management tool, great docket management tool. It gets rid of the cases. It's also a lot of judges who subscribe to the idea that this is just a family problem and it's not criminal conduct. I guess in this instance, I'm asking you to bridle me and my colleagues.
Another question?
Yes, Senator Springer.
What if these cases aren't compromised and, you know, the DA is forced to take it to trial because the person who's been accused is not going to plea or for whatever reason, and you have an abusive, continuing, threatened, abusive situation, and I know in Multnomah County, witnesses in misdemeanor cases are rarely subpoenaed. They just get notice of a trial setting. What's the likelihood that it's going to go to trial in any event, or is that going to put more the opportunity or the invitation to more coercive, threatening behavior increases as, quote, you get to trial and these people are confronting each other in court? And I know that presents itself in any family felony matter. Obviously, the situation's greater, but my sense is you're going to get a lot of cases are just going to wash out. Only things will have kind of maybe built themselves to a more difficult point at that time.
yeah, I don't think they can get much more difficult than they are, but I think I'd like to defer.
Why? If the judges don't have to compromise these, why do they?
Why do they?
Yeah.
Just for the reasons I said, it's a great docket management tool. If that's what they say they want, that's a way to get rid of another case. And anyway, that's one reason. The other is this notion that it's just a family dispute anyway, and courts ought not to be involved in it. And I just think that's wrong thinking. Senator Springer, I'd like to defer answer to your question to Doug Ballou from the District Attorney's Office, who's here, and he's with the heads of the victim's office there, and I think he could answer that better than I can, because I see him once they're there and ready to go.
Okay, well, I don't know that I know the answer, except my sense is, you know, the tough cases will wash out, you know, at the misdemeanor level, if there's any reluctance on the part of a witness, even a complaining witness, or inconvenience.
Well, some will, but by allowing these cases to be subject to these phony civil compromises, certainly doesn't help the situation. Just makes it worse.
Thank you. Ross Shepherd.
Madam Chair, we neglected to include the statement, do not compromise, in the little judicial bill.
Yes, we did. We did. We may have to go back and revisit that one if it ever comes back. Russ.
Good afternoon. I'm Russ Shepherd. I represent the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association, and I'd like to briefly explain to you the criminal civil compromise process as it's practiced in most jurisdictions around the state, if not Multnomah County. If the defense is able to persuade the victim to sign an acknowledgement of satisfaction, then there is a hearing set up on the motion for civil compromise. And at that hearing, the district attorney will relate to the court what the facts of the case are as were presented in the police reports. And the district attorney, at least in my jurisdiction, and I know in several other counties around the state, will routinely object to the granting of the civil compromise. And the court will certainly take that into consideration in making the decision. Now, the court, I need to stress to you that the court has to make a decision on this, and that decision is whether to enter an order of dismissal pursuant to civil compromise or deny the motion, and the case then is prosecuted as any other case. And this is a non-appealable, unreviewable order by the court. So if the materials that were handed to you by Judge Harrell say that the court should deny these motions, in the appropriate case, the court should and does deny these motions. So there's the filter that we already have. If the court hears of an assault in the fourth degree where a husband has really done grievous damage to his wife, his spouse, the court is not going to allow the civil compromise. And I can testify to you, at least most jurisdictions, if not all jurisdictions other than Portland, around the state. Now, if the court decides to grant the motion, at least in Lane County, and again, I can testify in some other jurisdictions that I know about, in most cases, this would be a conditional grant of the civil compromise, conditioned upon, if it's an abusive husband, the husband going through perhaps anger management or entering into a drug or alcohol rehabilitation situation, if that's indicated, or going through family counseling or mental health. And then the defense would be obligated to come back to the court after 6 months, or as a routine period of time, to report to the court if these conditions have been fulfilled. And the case will not be dismissed until the court sees if the perpetrator has gone through what has been mandated by the court. If the perpetrator has not, the case is then again set down for trial. So it would seem to be a shame for the legislature to say on the first offense there cannot be some sort of civil accommodation, especially if there's been a reconciliation between the husband and the wife. And you'll also note this bill would affect parents and children, and it would be too bad to have to prosecute a child on a first offense if the family is back in a stable and healthy and loving relationship. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon O'Shea.
Madam Chair, I'm with Ms. O'Shea. Judith Armada and Molly Pruitt of the Coalition testified first today.
They're not on the list, but why don't you come on forward?
My name's Doug Ballouf. I'm the Director of Victims Assistance in the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. To my right is Sharon O'Shea. She is the Director of Victims Assistance in the Clackamas County Victims Assistance Program.
I'll sort of wait till Holly gets here, but my name is Judith Armada. I'm with the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence.
We have had a domestic violence steering committee in Multnomah County now for about 2.5 or 3 years. One of the priorities of that committee has been to rectify the problem that we have had with domestic violence cases. About a third of the cases issued in Multnomah County are terminated by civil compromise. The practice in Multnomah County is that if someone requests a civil compromise, the civil compromise is granted. In my experience, I do not know of a civil compromise in a domestic violence case in Multnomah County that was not granted, despite the fact
that all those cases come to the family court in Multnomah County.
They come to the district criminal court, Senator Cohen.
And who's in charge of the district court there in Multnomah County?
Judge Bearden, Your Honor.
Have you talked with Judge Bearden?
Yes, Judge Bearden is opposed to... Judge Bearden likes civil compromises, I think is the answer. And I think the reason Judge Bearden likes them is he views them as cases that are family matters. They're cases that should not be in the criminal system. I don't want to speak more than that for Judge Bearden. I know he wrote a letter to Representative Kelly about his views, and he simply perceives these as two people have reached a compromise, excuse me, and the case should be dismissed. The difficulty with this view is that usually by the time a person comes forward, they have been abused many times and physically abused many times. The civil compromise goes into effect simply as a demonstration of the power the abuser continues to hold over the victim. The abuser can beat them. They can go to the police. The abuser can threaten them. The victim will agree to enter into a civil compromise. Civil compromises have no provisions for people to do anything in our county, and as a rule, they don't do anything. Many, if not most, of the people involved in domestic violence cases have some sort of substance abuse problem. All of you know that substance abuse problems are difficult to get people to deal with. We need the help of the courts. We need the help of some sanction in order to get the substance abuse issues dealt with and the anger and violence abuses dealt with. From my point of view, the real issue in front of this committee is that in a violent home, the state does have some obligation to intervene in that home and to try to make that a nonviolent home. This doesn't just impact the woman who may be the mother, but in a home where violence is routine, this kind of activity will impact the children. And I know this session has spent a great deal of time passing bills that help children. And the children will learn violence as an appropriate method of communication. So the question to me is, how do we intervene in these families in a creative manner to end the cycle of violence and the intergenerational cycle of violence? And one way that certainly does not intervene with these families in these domestic violence cases is the routine granting of civil compromises. As you know, each judge is a separately elected official, and I think Senator Springer's question was a good one. Each judge is going to do what each judge feels appropriate in these cases. I can only tell you that in my experience, except for Judge Harrell and maybe one or two other judges, my experience is universal in district court that those compromises are granted as a routine matter of clearing the docket, and that no further scrutiny of those kinds of cases is taken by the courts. And I'm sure that has a lot to do with docket, just the pressure the courts are under there. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have before the other people testify.
We have a little issue of misdemeanor sentencing guidelines that came through. It has to do with what kinds of sanctions are appropriate for physical abuse and misdemeanors. And I hope you'll support that piece of legislation on the House side, because it will give some, at least some minimal directions to judges about what's appropriate with any kind of misdemeanor, any kind of assaultive kind of person-to-person misdemeanor sanctions.
Does Ms. Swenson have that bill number?
Yeah, we do. Thank you. And we have judges who don't want to even look at that listing either.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
That's why my preference, actually, in this arena, especially of domestic violence, I much prefer the House bill before us than the primer.
Yeah. Okay. Sharon.
What I have to say comes from a slightly different angle. In Clackamas County, in the Victim Assistance Division, those reports are routinely channeled to victim assistance after being reviewed by the Deputy District Attorney on intake. We make contact with over 600 victims of domestic violence a year. That's just of the cases that come to the District Attorney's office that we see. in my experience, I have not seen any misdemeanor crimes under the Abuse Prevention Act, which were civilly compromised, that have ever resulted in an improvement in that domestic violence situation. In fact,
so
I've seen the
quite
opposite.
Different with Clackamas County, then?
Absolutely.
So you don't approve them in Clackamas County, civil compromise?
No. In fact, civil compromise is something that is rarely ever seen. That's not dealt with very often in Clackamas County. So where I'm coming from is a different aspect of, you know, my concern about the bill or for passing it. What I see is the opposite of improvement in those situations, because the offenders have the impression in domestic violence situations that that crime is not in fact a crime as such. It's something that the victim is punishing them for, because it is viewed as a choice of civil compromise or criminal prosecution. And I think it gives the defendant, the abuser, an upper hand. And I see them coercing victims on a daily basis from the victims I deal with. I can sit down with those victims and I can tell them what the person in their life is like and what they have probably said to them. And their mouths fall open. They are so overwhelmed that I could know something about, as much as I do, about total strangers. But it happens that often that after all of the years of doing this on a daily basis, you really do know what that power structure is like. And so the time we spend with the victims is telling them that it is not their case, no matter what. If it's a civil compromise issue, they do think that it's their case. The offender believes that it's the victim's case and that the victim is doing this to them. So what we tell our domestic violence victims is, this is not your case. This is the state's case. The district attorney decides whether or not to prosecute it. You are, as cold as it sounds, the victim witness in this case. If the person who has abused you has a problem understanding that and does not believe you because they don't believe the victims, you tell them to call me and I will be glad to explain that this was an assault or a menacing or a harassment or whatever under the Abuse Prevention Act, and that it was a crime against the laws of the state. That's where I come from on this. That's why I think it's important not to add the issue of civil compromise to those situations, because of the control element that the abuser has over the victim.
Thank you. Yes, coming from Clackamas County, it's hard for me to understand this bill particularly. So, Judith?
Yes, Chair Cohen, members of the committee, counsel. Judith Armada for the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence. I would like to say that the bulk of our formal testimony will be presented by our Executive Director, Holly Pruitt, but I wanted to...
We're about done here.
Okay, she's just going to make a few very brief comments, and I also want to make very brief comments. What I wanted to say also is that the misdemeanor sentencing guidelines, we participated in that process and provided testimony to in their proceedings. And as a result of the testimony that we provided, they changed the preference for family violence assaults, and they made that a jail preference instead of a counseling preference. And I think that it's important, because what we're saying here is we really want the system to hold these situations accountable, to hold the perpetrators in these situations accountable. We've worked with the legislature for the past 15 years to put some teeth into the law and to have it seen as a crime and not a family matter where we could shut the door and abandon these people. And I think what's happened is that now we've, through our innovative and creative bar, we've found the civil compromise is a way, again, to keep these things out of the system. They're not fun. People don't know what to do about them. They don't create wonderful solutions. We have a lot of work to do to get to those wonderful solutions, but this is helping us to avoid them. So I think that that's important to remember, and to also know that we are pressing for some of those solutions. The last thing that I really wanted to say was that we did a survey of our programs around the state, and there are 31 of them, and 22 of the counties, we had responses on that survey, and we asked them about the use of civil compromise, and in all but four of those counties, it was being used at least some of the time. So it's a pretty high use of civil compromise as a way to keep domestic violence cases, again, out of the system, and I think that that's significant. I also talked with the Victims Assistance Office in Washington County, and over the last year, in 1990, one-fourth of their cases were civilly compromised, and sometimes over the objection of the district attorney. So that's really all I have to say.
How Holly?
Thank you. I'm Holly Pruitt, Director of the Oregon Coalition Against Domestic and Sexual Violence, and I have provided you with written testimony. I would like to just reinforce a couple of points very briefly. And the first is that the reason that we need this bill is because the judiciary, like the law enforcement community, like every aspect of our society, is still saturated with the belief that domestic violence is not as serious as other types of assaults. And that's why we had to pass mandatory arrest provisions only for domestic violence. That's why we had to put in place free self-help restraining orders only for domestic violence. And that's why, again, civil compromise needs to be looked at as a special case in domestic violence, that it's not appropriate. Domestic violence assaults are more serious and demand a more rigorous intervention than non-familial assaults because of the continuous access and the guaranteed escalation of danger in domestic violence cases. We're not talking about civil compromises in cases where there's only been one slap, one brief hit. The fact is, those cases do not come to the attention of the criminal justice system. By the time someone's calling the law, it's usually because it's escalated to a point of very serious lethality. 3 out of 4 female homicide victims were murdered by their husbands or by their partners. The increase in lethality to a battered woman